He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.
Yes, and for all our listeners, my partner, my ranting department partner, is not here today. But I've got a number of things to talk about in the auto industry for this segment of our show. And it'll start out with what I foresee is coming forth in the auto industry as far as car pricing, truck pricing, and the like. That's one of the topics we'll cover with this tariff situation, which is ongoing between the U.S. and Europe and China. And I think NAFTA has fixed itself, but there's still going to be pricing fallout throughout the industry as the price increases for labor costs, labor rates, costs for producing cars, certainly amongst the NAFTA countries and maybe even Europe and beyond. And China, of course, I think we'll see an escalation in labor costs too, for one reason or another, continue to start spreading throughout the production industry and for the cost of materials as well, mainly steel and aluminum. I don't think it's hit plastics yet, but...
How much do you think it's going to add to the cost of a car?
Well, and I suspect we are going to see... We as car buyers are going to see not immediate but slow escalation of costs of the particular lines of vehicles you have been used to driving. You listeners and I have been used to driving throughout our lives, anywhere from starting out at around 3%, but I think we may see over the next 3 to 10 years escalations beyond the normal cost rises that auto industry has been trying to inflict on us over the last few years of up to 15% or maybe more by the 10th year of what we are paying for the same vehicles at this point in time.
So what I'm asking you from a consumer standpoint is if you're putting together your massive amount of money that you now need to buy a car, plus you've got
rising... more massive.
But plus you've got interest rates.
That's the other part of this, which I am not including in my projection of the cost, the base cost of vehicles. I think we are going to see, I don't know what the battery situation is going to be add to it. That may or may not be affected by the tariffs, but as we go towards more electrification of models, and they are coming towards us almost like a hurricane because everybody is panicking that we need to lessen the output of emissions from existing vehicles, and then at least to a certain point, there's still an increase expected across the board in fleet and average production cars of miles per gallon. That there's all the manufacturers are going to be having electrification at some level of many of their lines of cars, probably by 2025, if not sooner. Well, it's going to come sooner, but it's not going to get as prolific as it will be by 2025. There may be a electric or hybrid electric version of just about most models of vehicles from the now-to-be-discontinued gasoline-only version of Volkswagen Beetle right up through cars like the Camaros and the Ford Mustangs and... it's moving towards pickup trucks as well. You can already get some Chevrolet pickup trucks with hybrid assist and Dodge Ram pickups with hybrid assist, which means a very mild electric boost additional with electric motor version to some of their gasoline pickup trucks. And maybe they'll even get to the diesel versions as well. So... that's going to add base costs anyways, just because the cost of electrification of the vehicles adds quite a bit of money to the base cost of production because of the cost of the batteries plus the electrical componentry that goes along with adding electric motors to the gasoline or diesel-powered versions of these vehicles. But aside from that, I'm really trying to talk about the long-term implications of the tariffs that are going to probably stick around for a while if our current president stays in, and maybe it could be even the next administration, no matter who's ahead, might keep these tariffs in place. Because actually, I think they are quite popular with a lot of the voter segment of this country, because, and I'm not, I am one of these people that thinks that we have been robbed blind by the Chinese specifically in getting hold of the technology that American product manufacturers have long been in the lead of for the technology going towards hybrid cars, electric cars, and the like. And I didn't really know what the differential was in the tariffs between our selling, exporting cars to China and selling them on their homeland versus what we weren't paying for tariff rates for the Asian manufacturers coming and Europeans even bringing cars into our country. And to that end, I'm sort of a proponent of equalization of if it's going to cost 25% to bring an American car into the European side or the Chinese side of the oceans, that we should be charging like-kind tariffs on any cars coming back into our country.
Quick question. Is that cost, whichever way it goes, being presumably it's being passed on to the consumer?
Eventually it will be. There's but a lot of talk about how...
Already is
example,
what I mean.
For example, in the non-automotive industry, I have been amazed that prices of, let's say, televisions, which are also part of the situation, and most of them are being built in China right now, the prices of televisions in electronic stores has not or have not yet materially increased to the point of my knowing that a TV that I bought 3 years ago, although that model no longer exists, but the nearest model I can find of is not significantly higher priced, when it, especially when it goes on sale at the stores yet. But I have just also learned that we've had the biggest, I think the biggest debt between our U.S. and China in the last month alone. And it's all maybe based on the fact that there was a lot of advance ordering going on to try to get as much merchandise in from these countries into the warehouses in our country before the tariffs really took hold. And until that inventory goes out the door, so to speak, at the retail level, prices may not go up on those items. But once those items that got pre-purchased prior to the tariffs being implemented disappear from the warehouse shelves, we're going to be paying new pricing for all these things we've been buying at lower prices, which we'll find that will have been lower prices, are now sold out. And that's going to go to cars, too. And I think the manufacturers have been getting as much production of cars into our country at pre-tariff levels as possible. But once they go or are sold off the lots, we're going to be paying the new pricing that I think is going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of, well, I'll start at a low at 3%, but I think it's going to be 10 or 15% by 2025, higher and maybe more. For the same Mercedes or Audi model, won't be the same model, but the same level car that you were paying for now.
And what I'm saying
is... That's my projection.
All right. Well, thank you.
Jay is not here to either support or argue the point, but I think it won't matter what either of us says. We will see it at the sales part of the issue when we go to buy cars 7 years from now.
So let me just ask you, because there's a whole subprime area with car loans.
Correct.
That is going to become even more underwater-ish as...
Well, that's what, you know, interest rates are now going up relatively quickly on car loans, I believe. And the manufacturers that can offer 0% financing are still going to do that to try to move vehicles off the lots. But you're not going to be getting the same kind of discount on top of the 0% financing that some of us can get. And that by some of us, I mean the top loan-worthy people
with the
best credit. But... it's going to ripple right from the new car lots right down through the used car lots. Used car pricing will go up as well because people will be going to switch their vehicle purchases maybe from new cars to used car lots. And or you know, pre-owned vehicles that come off lease. Leases are going to go up too because interest rates are going up on that department. So the whole cost of acquiring a vehicle, whether you lease it or whether you purchase it, is going to be escalating in some cases quite rapidly, I think, in the next 2 to 3 years, maybe the next 1 to 3 years, mainly because interest rates are going up. And that's got everybody wondering what's going to really happen to the new car sales and the car markets in general. And I believe August sales were at a record or right around the 17-plus million annualized rate this year, and maybe September is coming in the same. But I think a lot of people who can afford to go out and buy cars and are following this tariff situation carefully and know what's going on are going to be buying vehicles ahead of their normal recycling or repurchasing time or releasing time to try to save money on their next acquisition.
Okay.
So that's it on that front. Another, I watch this show called Motor Week as often as I can on TV, and I watched a couple of segments that I had not watched at time of
the original broadcast.
Original broadcast last evening, and one of the ones that interested me is that they're at least out in the West and maybe in the middle of America and maybe even in the East, but although I haven't seen the signage yet, they're starting to put special signage up for alternative fuel corridors. That means if you are the proud owner of a car running on natural gas or propane or hydrogen, they're virtually not, refueling stations are non-existent as far as I can tell in our Northwest corner area for that kind of powered car. But out in California and Arizona and Midwest, refueling stations in these fuels are being installed along main highway corridors, which means the main interstate highway system as opposed to the localized country roads that we run in around here. And apparently they're all blue signs, and they've got signage which reflects where the corridors are, where you can find a hydrogen refueling station or a plug-in stop for electric cars. And the signs are put up when you arrive at a corridor where these stations are around, which means it could be in a 100-mile area for, let's say, a hydrogen station, one hydrogen refueling station, or natural gas or whatever it is, refueling, or an area where there are plug-in places to recharge your battery car if you're driving an electric-only vehicle, which, again, tells me, which I have been sort of off and on saying on this show, that the real strength in the hybrid car lines are going to be the hybrid cars, which are the combination gasoline-electric cars, such as the currently the Fusion Hybrid, the Sonata Hybrid, the Honda Hybrids, and any other car that's got a combination gasoline-electric motor propulsion system where you don't really need to have a plug-in situation for using the battery part of your propulsion system whenever it can effectively help reduce the use of the combustion fuel engine that's running the car. And I think we'll see that those will be the best cars for people to own that don't live in these mainstream refueling corridors where there are alternative refueling stations available for the mass market or people who are traveling along a main interstate system between, let's say, New York and Boston or L.A. and San Francisco or the like. And those cars are already on the road in California because California has been leading in the promotion of alternative fuel vehicles ahead of everywhere else in this country, as far as I can tell.
When was the last road trip you were on across country? It's been
A long time. I would say 8 years or more.
Because what we need to do is send you out. We need to send you out there.
I would love to be sent out there.
Yeah, I understand. No, I'm absolutely serious.
We are a country filled with wonderful national parks, the national parks, and fabulous areas to go. Grand Canyon, Craters of the Moon, the Red Hills of Arizona, many of which are nearby interstate systems, but well off the beaten track from the standpoint that you have to take an exit and you have to take more localized state roads to get to these places, which can be 50 to 100 miles off the main systems. Now, new fueling stations are going in across the country probably every week of every year now. I do not know who's funding them, whether it's the states or whether it's the fuel companies that provide this alternative fuel, because if they're going to put a station, they need to figure out how to get consumers to buy the vehicles that are going to run the fuel that they're putting the fueling stations in for. I personally don't have any interest in necessarily owning a hydrogen-powered car, for example, but maybe that's going to be a real alternative as well to hybrid electrics. I don't know, but you don't get fueling stations installed at national parks, as far as I know. Certainly, if there are two or three different kinds of alternative fueling stations, to go up to a national park entrance and find a hydrogen fueling station, a compressed natural gas fueling station, and whatever else might be there, is not going to be available for you if you are in need of such a fuel before you can get back to the main fueling corridors that we talked about earlier in this show.
True. It sort of depends on how things evolve, moving, how they progress moving forward based on people's understanding and availability.
That's right. And you know, we live up here in our broadcast land sort of off the mainstream. We have a certain amount of interstate highway system that are approaching our northwest corner, but it peters down to the Route 22s. The Conic Parkways and the like.
You have to go.
You have to get back on there.
There are people who only have to drive 7 minutes to get to a train, for example.
Right.
You're right. It's off the beaten or slash commuter.
And there's still an awful lot of the public that drives off the beaten track and isn't going to be able to avail themselves of these refueling stations, at least for the next probably 2 to 5 years, and with any numbers of fueling stations in any numbers being available for driving on non-interstate system or main corridor roads. Obviously, the Interstate 95 corridor along the coast of Connecticut going up towards Boston into Massachusetts and then further up into Maine will have these alternative fueling stations available, albeit at some distance between each other. As we know, we've talked a lot about the Tesla electric car, and Tesla's cars come equipped with completely upgradable software entitling their owners to know where every electric charging station for a Tesla is in the entire country of the U.S. But there's only one. Oh, there may now be two. Somebody said the Interlaken Inn around our broadcast area has a charging station. But before that, there was one at Chiwala, which was a former luncheonette place in Salisbury, and the owner happens to have a Tesla, and she had a charging station.
The Interlaken
I believe
had one
her
for a while.
Station was registered on the Tesla map too. So anybody with a Tesla knew there was a charging station, one only in Salisbury for a few years. And the Tesla Model S has been out since 2000. It's been out for 6 years now. Because I've talked to a couple of owners of 6-year-old Tesla S's, and they've all been delighted with them, but they don't have the access to the software upgrades for all the things, but they do know where the charging stations are. And albeit when the first Tesla Model S's were sold, at least on the East Coast here, there were very few refueling stations outside of your garage.
Do most people put in their own?
I think most people who buy an electric car will put in. When I test drove the Bolt a year ago, it had the charging cord was in the back,
right. And
you were certainly going to consider putting in a garage charging station if you were going to buy an all-electric Bolt, for example, or a all-electric Toyota Prius,
all-electric
car.
Are there still cost incentives around that?
Well, their tax incentives are running out. Tesla's got a promotion now to try to sell out their production of cars. I think by the end of this year, Any order placed by October 15th, which I think is today, was going to have the buyer possibly eligible for the full $7,500 federal credit, after which it's going to go down to, I believe, 50% of that credit for another segment of time, and then it may eventually vanish entirely as the numerical sales of these cars reach the theoretical limits that have been placed on them for being able to apply for and get the full 100% $7,500 federal credit. I think it's federal and state, maybe combined. I'm not sure what the credits are specifically. So Tesla was trying to run an advanced sales promo, I believe, over the last week. I think I saw a Tesla ad on TV by just chance on one of these programs that is automotive enthusiast related. And I have yet to see a mass. Well, I don't know what's happened in the sales department. We'll see in the next quarter when they report their sales. But the ad, I think I saw a large lot of Teslas outside probably the production factory waiting for trucks to come to pick them up to deliver them to consumers.
Are those trucks electric?
They are not electric that I know of. It'd be interesting if Mr. Musk was promoting his electric truck, which I'm not sure if it's even in production. There's been a lot of ballyhoo about that truck, and I think Budweiser had orders in for a number of them, and a couple of other corporations were planning on signing up for getting the Tesla-produced truck. But I do not know what's happened to that production situation as we speak on this show. But I don't know what the limit of the limit of range is going to be on that truck. I mean, there'll be a lot of batteries under there. But when you load up a auto transport truck with 6 to 8 or 10 cars, it is a very heavy weight, and weight sucks electric power out of batteries like nothing else does. And we're not totally flat all across our country, so. It may be all right to be on a flat stretch of highway, but then when you go up into the mountains, loaded with eight vehicles on the transport truck, whether it's cars or any other load of stuff, it's gonna suck those batteries dry. I'm not sure they're gonna be as proficiently efficient as Mr. Musk would like everybody to believe. But other manufacturers are gonna be going to electrification too, so it's not gonna be on him totally. And we'll just have to see what happens as we move forward with production of vehicles other than just passenger cars. And it's going much slower in the truck department, I think. There were some mild recalls out in the industry for Ford and Ram pickups, nothing which was really crucial in my book that everybody has to know about what they were. But if you are the owner of a Ford pickup truck as late as the 2018 model year and the Ram pickup trucks as late as, I think, the 16 or maybe even the 18 model year, when you should call your dealer if you're not getting your truck serviced at dealers now and just see whether or not you have a recall that you should at some point make a stop at your manufacturer's dealership level, not just the independent repair places, which we have a lot around here, and see whether or not you are a owner of a vehicle that has a recall out on it. And you can do that through the NHTSA website as well as calling your manufacturer's dealership body to find out about your any recall that might be on any vehicle, passenger car or truck, Jeep, anything that is currently on the road. And that should be done probably maybe once a year by if you don't see it in the publicity of TV shows and radio shows, news broadcasts.
He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys. Baby, you can drive my car.